Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving into some really fascinating stuff, the final chapters of Ezra and Nehemiah.
Yes. We're finally getting to the climax of the story, aren't we?
We are the return of the exiled Jewish people to Jerusalem. But it's not just about rebuilding the city walls, is it?
It's so much more than that. It's about rebuilding their whole lives, their faith, their community. You know, there are actually a lot of interesting parallels to our lives today.
Really? Tell me more.
Well, think about it. They were returning after years of exile, starting over in a place that had been devastated. I'm sure there were tons of challenges.
Yeah, like you'd think they'd all be thrilled to be back in Jerusalem, right? Their holy city. It wasn't that simple, was it?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But actually, Jerusalem was pretty much a ghost town at that point. Scholar Yamauchi points out that there were only about 6,000 people living there.
6,000. Wow, that's tiny. So why weren't more people rushing back?
Good question. A lot of it just came down to practical matters, making a living outside the city, tending to their fields and orchards. That was a lot more stable than trying to make a go of it in a city that was still being rebuilt.
Okay, I see. It's like choosing between the excitement of a startup and the stability of an established company.
Exactly. And Jerusalem was definitely a startup at that point, so
Yeah.
they had to come up with ways to encourage people to move back.
Like what kind of ways?
What one method they used was casting lots.
Casting lots, like drawing straws to see who gets to live where.
In a way, yes, but for them, it was more than just random chance.
What do you mean?
It was a way of seeking God's guidance. Like, even for practical decisions, they wanted to be sure they were aligned with God's will.
Wow, that's a very different way of thinking than most people have today. We're all about weighing the pros and cons or, maybe consulting an expert. They turn to, well, a higher power.
Exactly. And then the text goes into all these incredibly detailed lists of who settled where. It's like reading an ancient census.
Yeah, it's amazing how organized they were. Leaders, priests, Levites, they had it all planned out.
And speaking of the Levites, remember, they were the ones assisting the priests in the temple.
Right, the Levites. Sort of like the support staff, making sure everything runs smoothly.
Yes, essential to the temple services. So you see, they weren't just focused on the physical rebuilding, but also on the social and religious structures of their community.
And speaking of rebuilding, can we talk about the dedication of the wall? That must have been quite an event.
Oh, absolutely. It was a massive celebration. They brought in Levites from all the surrounding villages. And get this, there were two huge choirs processing along the wall, one going south, the other north.
Whoa, can you imagine the sound?
I know. Trumpets, cymbals, harps, lyres. The text says the joy was so great it could be heard from miles away.
Wow, they really knew how to celebrate back then.
They did. And it makes sense, right? It wasn't just about the wall itself, it was about everything it represented.
Like what?
Safety, unity, the restoration of their sacred space, years of struggle and sacrifice, and finally, a sense of hope for the future.
I love that. It's a good reminder to celebrate our own wins, no matter how big or small. But as we move into chapter 13, things take a bit of a turn, don't they?
They do. The focus shifts to Nehemiah's reforms, and we see a much different kind of leadership compared to Ezra.
Yeah, Ezra was more of a teacher focused on spiritual renewal through the law. Nehemiah was a man of action.
A governor who wasn't afraid to shake things up a bit.
And one of the things he did was exclude the Ammonites and Moabites from the assembly. That seems, well, kind of harsh.
It does, but it's rooted in their history, events that happened centuries earlier, even back to the time of Moses. These ancient laws and grudges, they still had a powerful hold on them.
So even though they were rebuilding and looking towards the future, the past was still very much present.
Exactly. It's a reminder that we all carry our past with us, and sometimes it can influence our present in ways we don't even realize.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then there's that story where Nehemiah throws Tobias stuff out of a temple chamber.
Oh, yes. Now remember, Tobiah was an Ammonite official who had opposed the rebuilding efforts from the very beginning.
Right. He was not a fan. So what was that all about?
Well, for Nehemiah, it was about protecting the sanctity of the temple. He saw Tobiah as a corrupting influence, and he wasn't going to stand for it.
He was serious about keeping the temple pure.
Absolutely. And it shows how much importance they placed on their religious practices, even if it meant taking drastic action.
Yeah. It's like he was saying, this is sacred ground and we need to treat it with respect.
Exactly. And, it's interesting because this idea of protecting what's sacred, it's something that still resonates with people today, even in different contexts.
Like what?
Well, think about the ways we protect our homes, our families, our values. We all have things that are precious to us, things we want to safeguard from harm.
Yeah, I get that. So it's not just about an ancient temple, it's about the things we hold dear in our own lives.
Exactly. And as we delve deeper into Nehemiah's reforms, we'll see even more examples of his, let's say, proactive leadership style.
Proactive, that's one way to put it. I'm definitely intrigued to see what else he does.
You won't be disappointed. Nehemiah was a man who got things done, even if it meant ruffling a few feathers along the way.
I have a feeling this is going to be a wild ride.
Buckle up. We're just getting started.
It's amazing how Nehemiah wasn't just focused on, like, those big dramatic actions, you know? He was also really hands-on with the day-to-day running of the temple.
Oh, absolutely. Very detail-oriented. For example, he realized that the Levites weren't getting the support they were supposed to.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, according to the law, they were supposed to receive a portion of the tithes and offerings, but they were so busy with their temple duties that they didn't have enough time to also farm and provide for their families.
Oh, I see. So they were basically struggling to make ends meet.
Exactly. It's kind of like a clergy burnout, you could say.
Yeah, totally. So what did Nehemiah do about it?
Well, being Nehemiah, he took action. He made sure they got their proper share of the resources so they could focus on their spiritual role without having to worry about, you know, putting food on the table.
That makes sense. It's a good reminder that supporting religious leaders or anyone who dedicates their life to serving others, it's not just about, like, spiritual encouragement. Sometimes it's about practical support, too.
Absolutely. And then there's the whole issue of Sabbath breaking, which Nehemiah was not too happy about.
The Sabbath? Okay, I have to admit, I've always kind of struggled with that one. Like, why was it such a big deal to them?
Well, it wasn't just about taking a day off. It was a fundamental part of their covenant with God, a way of showing their obedience and honoring their relationship with Him.
So it was more about the spiritual aspect than just the physical rest.
Exactly. It was about setting aside time to focus on what really mattered, to rest in God's presence, not just from work, but from the worries and anxieties of daily life.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. So for Nehemiah, seeing people disregard the Sabbath, it was like a direct affront to God.
Yeah, pretty much. He took it very seriously. He even went so far as to close the city gates on the Sabbath to stop merchants from coming in and doing business.
Wow, he is not messing around. Okay, but here's something I was really curious about. Remember how Ezra dealt with the issue of intermarriage? Well, it seems that problem hadn't gone away.
It hadn't. And this time, Nehemiah's reaction is even more intense, shall we say.
Intense? How so?
Well, he finds out that some of the Jewish men have married foreign women, and he's furious. And get this, even the high priest's grandson is involved.
No way. The high priest's grandson, that's pretty bold.
And who did he marry? The daughter of Sanballat, one of Nehemiah's biggest rivals.
Oh, wow. Talk about adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
But why was intermarriage such a big deal? I mean, it seems a bit extreme to us today.
Well, for them, it was about preserving their religious and cultural identity. They were afraid that foreign wives would influence their husbands and children, leading them away from the God of Israel.
So it wasn't just about who they were marrying. It was about the potential impact on their faith and their community.
Right. They saw it as a threat to their very way of life.
I see. It's like they were trying to protect their heritage, their traditions. And, you know, that kind of anxiety about cultural change, it's something we still see today.
No, absolutely. It's a very human thing to want to hold on to what's familiar, especially in the face of rapid change and globalization.
Yeah, it makes you think about how history repeats itself, even in different ways.
It does. But you know, what strikes me about Nehemiah is that even though his actions were sometimes, let's say, forceful, there's this underlying passion, this deep love for his people and his faith.
Yeah, I can see that. It's like he was driven by this overwhelming sense of duty.
And that comes through so powerfully in his prayers, especially those Remember Me prayers that he keeps offering up to God.
The Remember Me prayers, what were those about?
Well, it's not that he thinks God has a bad memory or anything. It's more like he's pleading for his actions to be seen and acknowledged. Like, God, I'm trying my best here. Please don't let my efforts be in vain.
Oh, I see. So it's like a way of seeking validation from a higher power.
Exactly. It's very human.
Yeah.
You know, wanting our efforts to be recognized, especially by something greater than ourselves. But then there's this really interesting contrast with his Remember Them prayer, the one directed at those who have messed up, let's say, desecrated the priesthood.
Oh, right. It's like he's calling down divine judgment on them.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. It really highlights the seriousness of their actions and the consequences of straying from God's commands.
So on the one hand, he's asking God to remember him for his good deeds. And on the other hand, He's asking God to remember others for their wrongdoings.
Right. It shows this deep sense of justice, this belief that actions have consequences, both positive and negative.
That's a powerful message. And it makes me think, are we as mindful of our own actions? Do we consider the ripple effects they might have on others and on our relationship with, well, whatever we consider sacred?
That's a great question. And I think it's something worth pondering, you know. How do our actions shape our lives and the lives of those around us? What legacy are we leaving behind?
Deep stuff. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, from the challenges of repopulating the city to Nehemiah's, let's say, unique approach to leadership. It's clear this rebuilding wasn't just about physical structures. It was about something much deeper.
Absolutely. It was about rebuilding a people, their faith, their sense of community, their very identity. And, you know, that's something that resonates with all of us, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, haven't there been times in your own life when you've had to rebuild something? A relationship, a career, even just your sense of self.
Hmm. That's an interesting thought. Yeah, now that you mention it, there was that time when, well, maybe that's a story for another deep dive.
Uh-huh. Fair enough. But the point is, we all go through those periods of deconstruction and reconstruction in our lives.
Like our own personal Jerusalem.
Exactly. And just like the Israelites returning from exile, we have to figure out how to make a home in a place that might feel unfamiliar or even hostile.
So it's not just about the physical act of rebuilding. It's about the emotional and spiritual work that goes into it.
Exactly. It's about finding hope in the midst of chaos, strength in the face of adversity, and ultimately a way to move forward.
It's interesting, you know, thinking about Nehemiah and how strong his personality was. It makes you wonder how much of that was, like, necessary.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he was definitely dealing with some tough opposition.
He was, but sometimes his methods seem a little, well, extreme, like throwing Tobias' stuff out or, you know, dealing so harshly with the intermarriage issue.
I know what you mean. It can be jarring to read those passages from a modern perspective. But for Nehemiah, I think those actions were a reflection of how deeply he cared about his faith and his people.
Yeah. It was like he saw those things as threats to everything they were trying to rebuild.
Exactly. And he was willing to do whatever it took to protect what he believed in, even if it meant being confrontational.
But is there a balance? You know, like, can you be that committed to your values and still be compassionate towards those who disagree with you?
That's a great question. And I don't think there's an easy answer. I mean, it's something we all wrestle with, right? Finding that balance between conviction and compassion.
It is. But it's definitely something worth striving for.
Absolutely. And maybe that's one of the things we can take away from Nehemiah's story. The importance of leading with conviction, but also remembering to temper that conviction with grace.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Ezra and Nehemiah, what's the main takeaway you hope our listener will get from all this?
You know, I think what's so powerful about this story is that it reminds us that rebuilding is about so much more than just, you know, physical structures. It's about rebuilding lives, rebuilding communities, rebuilding hope.
Yeah. It's about facing challenges head on, making tough decisions, and ultimately finding a way to move forward.
Exactly. And that's something that I think resonates with all of us, no matter what our personal Jerusalem might look like.
That's a beautiful way to put it. So whether you're rebuilding a relationship, a career, or even just your sense of self, remember that it's an ongoing process and, well, it's worth it.
It is. It's a journey of rediscovering hope, resilience, and the incredible power we all have to create something new and beautiful out of the broken pieces of our lives.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Ezra and Nehemiah. We hope you found it insightful, thought-provoking, and maybe even a little bit inspiring.